Coming up on All About Android, we discuss Android development and security of IoT at August. Also, I have a review of the Sony Xperia XZ3, the OnePlus 6T, and the Red Hydrogen 1. We have both of those in-house. We're going to show off the impressive results also of Google Camera's upcoming night sight mode. It's really cool. And we have an email and a whole lot more coming up next on All About Android.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Check out LegalZoom today to see how they can make life better for you and your business. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout. And by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit. And use code TWIT for 20% off. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 393, recorded on Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. Your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And there we go.
Florence Ion.
Yeah, we are Voltron for Halloween. No, we are not. Oh. Not this time. Sorry to get your hopes up. Although that would be a really great group costume idea.
Yes.
Joining us today, first time to the show, introducing Parth Padgaukar, Android developer at August. How are you doing, Parth? It's great to get
I'm
you
doing
here.
Well, I am this really August. Excited to be here. That August.
This August. Not the month that just passed. Summer is over.
Although
sorry
August
to
is
tell
fantastic.
You all.
It's
I
a
only great
live
month.
In one month. It's kind yes. of exciting.
What are you doing here in September then? Or October
I'm very
even.
Sorry. It's
technically almost November.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, see, it's time travel is really hard for me. August, tell us a little bit about it.
So August is a smart home access company. What we do is we try to make people's lives and specifically homes easier to access for the people who need to access them and harder to access for the people who oughtn't to be inside. Specifically, our flagship product is the August Smart Lock. And what it allows you to do is...
show it off.
Yeah, show it off. What it allows you to do is clip on our smart lock onto your existing deadbolt. And you can use our mobile apps to unlock the door, provide guest access, to integrate with a doorbell camera or a keypad, and manage all the people who need to come into your house, provide that access without using physical keys, which people can duplicate, and you'll never know that it happens. Giving access using the August apps is secure, and you can revoke that access at any time.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's right
a really
on.
Cool
Very
set
cool
of products.
Product.
And it
Very
works
cool.
in apartments.
It works in apartments. It works wherever there is a deadbolt that is separate from your doorknob. Mm-hmm. So if you have one of those plates that like has the deadbolt as uh-huh. part of the doorknob, that unfortunately won't work with our system. But if you have most people in like single family houses mm-hmm. tend to have like deadbolts that
yeah.
are separate. So
yeah,
it works
have.
For a large number of people in the U.S.
They kind of split lock. Awesome. We're going to talk a lot more, I think, about the product, yes, but also, I mean, you're a big part mm-hmm. of the Android team. We are an Android show, so we always like when we get guests like you on to kind of talk about kind of the Android things that are related to that. In the case of this, obviously, security is a big topic.
Yeah.
There's a lot around security, not just of your home, but of IoT in general.
Right.
There's just
connected devices.
So many aspects
yeah.
to that. And we are going to talk to you, but first, Ron, we've got some news that we should probably talk about right off the top of the show.
Yeah, we're very excited to talk to Parth, but we wanted to talk about a little bit of news that hit the Android world last week. We want to make sure we addressed it as soon as we possibly could. I'm sure many of you in the viewing audience saw the New York Times report that reported that a number of sources detailed how Andy Rubin, who's best known as the father of Android, is the creator of the Android operating system while he's at Google, had been awarded a $90 million exit from Google after an inquiry into improper relations that he had with an Android staffer. Since this report came out, we've heard from a lot of folks, including Andy Rubin, as well as Sundar Pichai. Rubin denied the allegations, initially when it happened. But at the time, Google ruled the relationship to be inappropriate nonetheless. And even though it was ruled that Rubin was in the wrong, they still chose to reward him with a huge payout upon his exit from the company. And this report in the New York Times reported that they paid him $2.5 million per month for the first 2 years, then $1.25 million per month for the following 2 years after that. He's due to get his last payment, I believe, this month, which brings to a total of $90 million. In addition to the amount of money that he got from his payout, when he left, they really made his departure seem amicable in the public. And actually, Larry Page, who's the head of Google at the time, had lots of statements of gratitude and thanking him for his work and the impact he's had on billions of people with Android. And it's important to note that this is the same relationship that led to his leave of absence from Essential, his latest company that he founded. And that leave of absence happened last year. Andy Rubin denies that he forced himself on the woman in the hotel room, and he's actually calling the New York Times article a smear campaign related to a divorce that he's going through with his wife. So he chimed in on that on Twitter. Sundar Pichai released a statement talking about how painful it was to see the New York Times article, and explaining also that Google has not awarded exit packages to 48 employees in the past 2 years, including senior management, who were fired for sexual misconduct. Pichai's statement did not mention Andy Rubin or Richard Duvall, the Google X director, who was also cited in the article in the New York Times. So needless to say, real tough one to read, especially for all of us tracking Android so closely. Real tough one for, I got to imagine, for everyone who works at Google to read. In fact, there's been some coverage and word getting out that a group of nearly 200 Google employees are planning a women's walk to walk out of work sometime this week in response to Google's lack of accountability in this topic. Clearly, there's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot that is involved in the climate of today, where we're really, you know, seeing a lot of women speaking out and their voices being heard, and the ramifications of men's actions in both in the workplace and in the personal place. By no means do we want to undercut that, or do we want to, here on the show, we just want to, you know, try to positively add to the discourse and the discussion. That said, we're going to take a little time, and next week we're going to have a more deeper discussion about this, partially to see kind of what comes out of the women's walkout and to see what Google's response to that is, but also because it's a lot to discuss. And it's, personally for me, it's super, super disappointing on many, many levels. But we wanted to address it here on the show this week, so you guys knew that we were aware of it, we saw it. Come back next week, we're going to have a deep discussion about it and see if we can add to the discourse in a positive manner. But it happened, and it sucks. So,
yeah, I should also say, and thanks to someone in chat, who was it? PC guy in chat who posted, I guess as of an hour ago, Axios is reporting that, Rich Duvall, who mentioned the director at X, which is the moonshot unit of Alphabet, is reportedly out on for similar, you know, reasons around harassment, which the New York Times did spend some time kind of talking about that too. So, yeah.
It's tough. And the thing is that, you know, we even discussed internally, do we want to talk about it? There's a lot here to discuss. And you know, it's really a lot of it is Andy Rubin's personal life, which, you know, right. You know, is not, you know, it's tough when this happens in public and who are you saying there? And it's the larger Google, and we're very focused on Android, but he is so tied to Android, and especially with Essential being in the marketplace and all this sort of stuff that we didn't want to ignore it. So we'll talk about it next week. Give us some more time to process, see how things go, see what the fallout is from Rich Duvall's departure. And just, you know, keep, you know, kind of supporting, those around us who are speaking out and those who, are trying to do the right thing and just be good people. And remember that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yep. Well said, Ron.
Well said.
All right. Should we get to talking about Android?
Yeah.
Like nuts and bolts Android?
We should.
All right, let's do it.
We should. Parth, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I am excited to talk to you because we're excited to talk to you. Not just me. It's not just me here. but we're excited to talk to you because this whole world has been overtaken by a IoT storm. I mean, everywhere we look now, it's like, really, Android is no longer just contained within the confines of a phone and tablet. It is literally everywhere now, especially that the Google Assistant is like permeating everywhere. In the case of my house, I've got at least 3 microphones per room. So definitely everywhere. I kind of want to talk a little bit first about the work that you're doing at August, because like we're sitting here and we're going, oh yeah, this is smart locks. How does this intersect with our Android world? And so thinking, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I am the senior developer at August on the Android team. And what we are doing is trying to take the wide variety of Android phones, whether that's a Samsung phone or a Vizio or the Pixels, and we're trying to make all of them work, which seems easy in theory until you say it out loud and you realize that everyone has a different interpretation of how Bluetooth should work on their phones.
Right.
Some people think it should work. Some people think it shouldn't work. I'm looking at you, LG.
Strangely specific.
We've had like multiple phones from LG that just like don't work over Bluetooth.
That's so funny because I use Bluetooth and Samsung phones to do Wi-Fi direct pairing because the Pixel phones like that stock Android for some reason doesn't like do it the way, or the Google Android doesn't do it the way.
It's funny. So my first phone ever was a Samsung Galaxy S3 and Bluetooth was, and then I upgraded to Pixel, and every OS and phone upgrade I've had since then has only made Bluetooth better.
Interesting.
I've had Pixel since 2015 and it's been a dream all the way through.
Maybe I grandfathered a bad spec or something.
Yeah, you like were too mean to your phone. It's like, I'm turning off Bluetooth. Yeah.
So, all right. So you work at August. You kind of like work at this intersection of like Android and IoT. What kind of things are you considering when you are like getting together with the team and you're like, let's develop?
We're all kind of full stack developers in the way that, you know, we don't have a person who's locked in a room working on a database. We don't have a person who's locked in a room just working on UI. We're all doing everything. So we all have to think about security. We all have to think about user experience. We all have to think about like the performance of the phone, how fast things are happening, what messages we're presenting to the user, which is challenging, but that's honestly part of the fun of working at a connected device company. There's a lot of challenges in getting this really nifty device to turn on your door.
Right, physically turn.
Yeah, to literally physically turn. There's not like, there's not a whole lot of things I can, you know, do with my life that involve getting physical things in the real world to move based on a button that I tap on my phone, which is really, really cool.
It's almost like telekinesis in a way.
Yeah, it's like magic.
It is.
Bluetooth is basically magic. When it works.
It is. It is.
It is magic
to just walk away from the door and hear it locking behind you.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's how this should work. So IoT and security is often bundled together in a word cloud because it's basically on everybody's mind. I'm bringing in these things into the home. How can I be sure that these are safe? What do you guys do at August to kind of like make sure that the lock is not only safe when it's on the door, but that the app that people are using, you know, that they feel like this is not going to get penetrated by some weirdo in a van nearby? Just saying, they exist.
No, totally. So, I mean, the first thing is that I think the default base case for people is that they think that their deadbolts are secure, which oftentimes they're not super secure just because people buy things mostly because of the price point, not necessarily because they're fantastically, you know, well secure and they can't be picked and stuff like that. Also, anytime you're giving out a key to someone, automatically you have no idea what they're doing with that key unless you watch them the entire time they have that key, at which point it's kind of useless giving them a key. So upgrading from that is putting an August lock on your door or any smart lock that you can provision access with. This means that you can remove access whenever.
Sorry, I can't live in a world where these little plastic coverings.
Slower, do it
exist.
Slower.
Oh.
Come on.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's where it's at. That's
Give
the money.
Give us some ASMR.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
Oh yeah.
I like that. I like that you went slower and then sped it up. That was good.
So the value prop of August is that It's secure from the start because you can manage that access. And immediately when you remove access for someone, that access is gone. Guests that you add to the lock have to connect to our backend in order to connect to the lock.
Right.
So if our cloud at any time realizes that they shouldn't have access, they don't get access anymore. And that's just not a security model that you can enforce with just normal, you know, 1855 hardware. And like, if you think about it, deadbolts really haven't evolved that much since, you know, Yale and Schlage all of these companies made them in probably the late 1800s. There's a key. You stick the key in the, in the lock. You turn it, and like you're inside.
Yeah,
that's the model.
It's just a bar between you and the world.
The
science of getting through locks has had a really long time. To develop, right?
And then on the software side of things, we take things really seriously too. We have really high level encryption that runs on every Bluetooth packet that we transmit. So even if someone is sitting next to you with a Bluetooth sniffer, they'll see garbage, and they won't be able to figure out what's going on. We make sure that you can't replay Bluetooth packets, so that you can't use previous packets in order to unlock the door later on. I've already talked about our security model for managing access to the lock. And what this basically means is that we've baked security into every layer of the product, whether that's the application side, whether that's our cloud, whether that's the lock. All of these things know how to be secure, and they know how to be secure together. Yeah.
So there's lots of talk around IoT because it is kind of all over the place in its current implementation. And, you know, down the line, we'll eventually see a little more unification. But for now, it's kind of the beginning stages. And so there's a lot of people wondering, like, should this be regulated? Because it's not really, you know, there aren't really any reins on it right now. It just kind of is where it is. And you kind of just have to trust the brand and the company that you're buying into to do it for you.
It really stinks because, so for example, there was this kerfuffle a while ago where a Bluetooth safe, they found out that it was broadcasting the PIN for the safe over plain text, over Bluetooth. And at first you're kind of like, oh, well, you know, it sucks for them. Their company is going to take a hit. But then I kind of realized that my fortunes are tied to whatever company claims that they're an IoT connected device company as well. Because it hurts all of our brands when people do dumb stuff like that. And when people make poor security choices, it means that the whole connected device space suffers because people lose trust.
Yeah.
And so much of this is based on the fact that, like, no one is going to go and read our source code and understand what's going on. Yeah. They just kind of have to trust our brand and trust that, you know, we've never had any security problems. We have independent security researchers coming in every year to audit all of the changes that we make. And they're always... I mean, I don't know if security researchers are happy to not find problems, or they're unhappy when they don't find problems.
Right.
I don't know their lives.
Know they're effective when they do find something.
Right, exactly.
At least there's that.
But you have to dig into each individual brand to find that. I think a lot of the security problems in the IoT space aren't necessarily security IoT problems. They're privacy problems. Mm. And when you start talking about how should privacy be regulated, you have to start thinking about things outside of like connected devices. You have to think, about the Equifax breach, the Yahoo breach, all of these things that involve really, really personal data about people just being flung onto the internet with honestly no repercussions for the companies. I think that's the thing that bugs me the most about all of that. So if we were to take, as a country, a strong stance towards protecting the privacy, if it's a GDPR kind of thing, or anything of that ilk, it would, I think those strong protections that we could provide to consumers and to the public would roll down to IoT from a privacy point of view, not necessarily from a, like, we need to make sure that all Bluetooth connected products have XYZ bit encryption, because I don't think we don't want government telling us exactly what level of encryption to use. We tried that in the 90s and it didn't work very well. But enforcing how, like, what a company can do with data and enforcing limits on the availability of that data, I think, is a much better approach than telling someone what level of encryption or something like that.
Yeah.
So what you guys do here, then, you know, obviously in the world of IoT, you're creating consumer products that people put into their homes. They are security at their core. It is providing security for their home. And one thing that I kind of, you know, have thought a lot about is this intersection between wanting something that's truly secure, but then also wanting something that's really convenient, because that's what we look to technology for, to make our lives more, you know, easier and more convenient. How do you find the balance there between creating products that are easy and convenient to use, but also providing the maximum amount of security? Because, I mean, really, at the end of the day, these are protecting homes, and everybody's most important things are in their home, you know?
So yeah, no, if the door's unlocked, like, there's nothing really, yeah.
Right.
The nice part is that I don't think August as a company has had to make a whole lot of trade-offs between convenience and security. Security is one of those things that we thought about from the beginning when we were building the platform, when we were building our first generation locks, and as we were developing our apps. The exciting thing is that because we've baked in security from the core, mm-hmm. we can build a better user experience and explain to people, hey, by the way, you can give three different kinds of access, you know, recurring, temporary, always. You can, and we have that opportunity to educate the user about different permission models, about different access types. And that is, I think, you have to reframe it. It's not a trade-off between convenience and security. It's mm-hmm. how do I educate this user on how to be a better user of our product? And if that's and if that fails, that's because we didn't do a good job educating the user, not because mm-hmm. like the user's stupid or because like there's a bad trade-off that we made between convenience and security.
And so then from a developer standpoint, you know, from Android development, creating an app around that, is that a task that's achieved through proper onboarding? Like, would you say you've done a great job if your onboarding process, which I was kind of thumbing through the app, and because I don't have a device set up for it to connect to, I can only get so far, so far to kind of show it off. But it looks like you guys have done some work around onboarding. It's really important, right? Because anybody's going to end up with this product. You need to make sure that everybody understands it beginning to the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the interesting things is we have these two separate classes of users, right? We have owners who actually set up new locks, and we have guests who are using the locks, but don't necessarily need to administrate. And so we have these two different types of things we need to onboard for, which are remarkably different. Users who want to administrate the locks need to understand, you know, what the settings are, what the, you know, when to firmware update the lock, how to add new users, which are things a guest doesn't care about. All they want to do is get inside because it's raining, they need to go to the bathroom, whatever it is. And so building these two different kinds of user education, because the problem with the word onboarding is a lot of times people think of these like 18-page long wizard flows where you're like, next, I don't care. There's a stupid animation there. I still don't care. You know, that kind of thing. So building in an experience that's fluent and seamless and allows the user to understand how to use your product without them feeling like they're sitting in a classroom is important. And it's something that we're always trying to be better at.
Mm-hmm.
So shifting gears to Android apps a little bit, kind of away from the locks into the Android apps, we talk a lot about material theming on the show. We talk a lot about design, and we're always giddy when we see an app that is developed to Google's theme. So considering, you know, you guys have an app for both the iPhone and Android users, how do you like maintain that balance to keep Google's looking material-wise and keeping the iPhone folks happy?
It's hard because all of these themings, whether it's human design, I think is what the iOS side is called, mm-hmm. and material design, they're all moving targets.
Yeah.
Right. Material design from 2015 is way different than material design two.
Yeah. Material theme, in my personal
opinion, material design two is starting to look a little iOS-y. Mm.
With the curved corners,
with the curved
and the
bubbles. Yeah, there's no longer this notion of like sheets of paper sitting on top of each other, and sheets of paper typically don't have like little rounded corners on them. Maybe we came up with a great idea,
right?
But what that means is that, you know, unless you're putting a lot of effort into constantly reskinning all of these apps, and you know, Facebook has, you know, 80 million developers working on this sort of thing, and Google does, and all of these big companies do. But as a smaller team, you have to choose which pages get the reskinning effort, and which pages you're like, this kind of looks the same, so we won't really put that much effort in. We try to make the apps visually distinct to reason. We don't want to make the apps different looking just because, you know, just because like we want to feel good about ourselves as developers.
Right. And you have a household full of multi-platform users, so you want everybody to be able to relate to the app together.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So an iOS user should be able to pick up the Android app on, you know, their spouse's phone.
I need to lock the door.
Exactly. Yeah. And not have to go through a completely different experience. You know, maybe,
how do you use this?
Yeah, maybe the tabs are on the top versus the bottom, but that doesn't seem like such a large design constraint to get around for us users. So it's something we think about, and it's something that, you know, as a small team, we're resource constrained. So I wish we had more time to reskin everything exactly when Google released their new specs. And I'm sure the iOS team feels the same way. But, you know, we kind of have to make do with, okay, well, we're just going to leave the tabs on the top. And if that's the way it's been, so people will figure it out.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? So with regards to IoT, kind of like shifting back to the original gear, we kind of talk about how it can be a lot to manage all these different services under your house. Even if you have like a Google and an August smart lock, you're still handling two different services. How do we make this manageable for people? How does August try and make it manageable for folks who are kind of trying to enter this IoT world, but don't want to feel like
don't want to feel like they need 20 apps just to do it.
And by the way, Google heard that whole conversation.
I know, right? Yes, I know. My phone lit up as well. There was something you said there.
I know. I personally relate to this. I just installed TP-Link's little smart...
The smart plugs.
Yeah, the smart plugs, mm-hmm. as well as a couple Philips Hue light bulbs mm-hmm. in my room. And suddenly, like, I had this whole bucket full of, you know, IoT apps. And I was like, I don't really want all of these.
It's a folder of just IoT apps.
Yeah. And you're like, you never need to touch them again. And the nice part is now I never need to touch them again because of all the work that Google has been doing, honestly. Mm-hmm. And this is something that August has bought into from the beginning. We're platform agnostic. We can run on If, we run on Google, mm-hmm. we run on Alexa. Basically every smart speaker platform is one that August supports. So theoretically, I would be crushed if this happened, but someone might never need to use the app, right? Because you can mm-hmm. unlock the door.
That's true.
With the speaker, you can lock the door using the speaker. So you might never have to touch the app that I worked so hard on.
That's right. That news, I'm sorry, we didn't lead with that. That news actually came out. It was in my inbox a few days ago. I'm sorry.
You can actually now
tell your Google Smart Speaker to lock the door for you, which I think is awesome because, like, that's...
Yeah.
That's what I want.
I mean, that's what you do.
That's the home of the future.
A universal hub or something that knows how to speak all of these languages. And in the Google world, anyways, I know Apple has their own thing, but on this show,
we're not talking about them.
That doesn't exist.
Not all smart locks also use, to put that out there, not all smart locks use that kind of voice command functionality.
Right.
It's fun. It's fun.
Fun to lock your home with your voice.
The other cool thing about that announcement is that our doorbell camera actually now hooks in with all these smart speakers
as well.
So when someone rings your August branded doorbell camera, your Google Home will say, someone's at the door.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's like a doorbell.
Like a real doorbell again.
Yeah. What is a doorbell?
I don't even
know what a doorbell is.
It calls people. What does that mean?
I apologize that I have not put the lock in my home yet. I'm a little behind on some IoT projects. But does it do facial recognition in the camera?
No, that's an area that we're looking at right now. But for the most part, people seem happy with just being able to ring a doorbell.
You just want to know someone's at the door sometimes.
Yeah. We're users haven't really been like, we need facial recognition in the apps or in the doorbell camera. Most of the times the interactions are quick enough that it doesn't really, it feels like a seamless part of your day anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So but it's something we're looking into, obviously.
So we were having this discussion on the show last week about smartphone innovation and maybe how it's kind of not stalled, but it's definitely hit a bit of a plateau in the sense that we kind of expect now what's going to become better and what's going to be improved upon.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's happening in the IoT space or have we not reached that point yet?
I actually really appreciated the segment y'all did last week about mobile phone innovation. And your guest last week, I forget her name.
Nicole Scott.
Yes, Nicole Scott. She really hit the nail on the head. Because I think a lot of people have been using the word innovative mm-hmm. for smartphones. And like, mm-hmm. let's be honest, I love my Pixel 3, but I wouldn't call it like an innovative phone. Mm-hmm. They took the Pixel 2, iterated on it, and they literally just like incremented the number, and they were like, great, 3.
And I've got
the Hydrogen 1, which we'll talk about later. Maybe this is innovative.
That's innovation.
We'll talk about this a little bit later, but anyways, continue.
I think because IoT, because connected device spaces don't really have the head start that mobile phones do.
Right.
We're still kind of lower on Maslow's hierarchy. Mm-hmm. We haven't figured out all of the pieces that need to be in. We haven't figured out what kind of ecosystems we want to build. We're getting there. I think things like smart speaker integrations and a Google Home Hub that can tie all of these different disparate ecosystems together under one solid layer of interaction, you know, Google smoothing or Alexa or whoever smoothing out all of the bumps and kinks that, you know, we have versus, you know, SimpliSafe versus whoever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step, I think, to having building blocks that other people can play with. Because if some other developer wants to go and build interactions before all of these smart speaker interactions or anything like that, you'd have to go and integrate with each individual API, yeah. Which is fun like the first four times.
No,
and then
it sounds like a nightmare.
No. Actually, I have things I want to do with my life.
sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Now, if there's not already, I'm sure within the next year, there's going to be someone who says, hey, you integrate against our API and we'll farm it out to Alexa and to Google and to whoever. And now you're talking about ways to truly innovate on top of all of the existing products. You can tie all these things together and create interactions that we had probably never thought possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we only think about the August world. And although it's a lovely world, there's much more outside of that, and there's all sorts of products that Nest has done to, you know, trailblaze through and create this notion of IoT, and that was actually probably truly innovation there. You know, tying all these products together, I think, is going to be the next generation of innovation.
Right.
Which accidentally rhymed.
The ecosystem, baby.
Yeah.
Might be a title.
So I think the chat room is going to lose it unless we ask very quickly, Parth, in the spirit of innovation and more on the programming side, what's your take on Kotlin?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I would not say that we are a Kotlin shop, but there is Kotlin in the app. I am adding more Kotlin to the app every day. It's hard because we have a really large legacy code base, mm-hmm. and it's one of those things that when you're at a larger company, more people can kind of be siphoned off to revamp parts of the code base. But we move very quickly in the direction of new products, and that to the detriment sometimes of manicuring existing code. I'm a huge fan of Kotlin. I think that it is the best thing that's happened to Java development in a long, long, long time. Basically ever since generics, I think.
Dang.
Like 2005. And I'm really excited to see where it goes. Everything from Kotlin native to Kotlin JS, meaning you can write code once and run it like literally everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a dream come true. So I'm all aboard the Kotlin train.
All aboard the Kotlin train.
Woo-woo.
We've got another title option. Fantastic, Parth. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
A great insight into IoT and security and Android development and all this stuff.
It's all connected.
It's all connected, and it's such a big time for this type of product right now. So you guys have got to be thrilled.
Really the golden age.
It really is. And what you're talking about interconnectivity and kind of, you know, what you love about August is one thing, but what other people discover that they can do with this product combined with that product, that's like the promise of the smart home right there. Is like, I can make my home as modular as I want it to be and do all these crazy things.
It's very fun.
And we're at the beginning stages of that. So, but you're going to stick around and talk about everything that we got on the
absolutely.
Show. You're not just here
you
to talk
get rid
about
of me.
August, and we're super
he
thrilled
heard
that you're going to stick
around.
There
were a lot of phones on the show today.
I just like touching phones, honestly.
Basically,
it's a little weird.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, we've got some phones for you.
This is all about Android. You're in the right place.
This is the right episode for it, too. But before, yes, here's four of them, and we've got eight more. No, we don't. It's just these four.
Well, technically. We have two more on the table.
That's true. Before we get into the hardware section, we're going to thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is LegalZoom. I've been a big fan of LegalZoom for years now. And if you're a business owner, there's a lot to like here as well. You know that owning your own business is not easy by any stretch. But no one could have prepared you for the amount of work that's involved in running your own business, from understanding tax law changes to contract reviews and so much more. I mean, it changes every day. You've got all new things to take a look at. And you're like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to understand this, understand what it means. It's tough to do it all on your own. That's why LegalZoom is there to give you the tools that you need so you can focus on running your business. Giving you every, you know, all the insight into what these forms are, why you might need to do them.
them to best run your business. We use it here at Twit, and we know it's going to work for you as well. More than 1 million Americans have used LegalZoom to start their businesses. But even after your business is set up, LegalZoom can still help you out. Things like lease agreements, changing tax laws, which, as we know, are changing pretty rapidly, contract reviews, they're all a part of running your business, and you need to know about them. These are the kind of legal hurdles that LegalZoom can help you cover so you don't lose momentum at the end of the year, especially. They even created a business legal plan so you can get advice for your business from vetted independent attorneys and tax professionals who are licensed in every state. And the best part is you won't get charged by the hour, no thank you, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. So visit LegalZoom.com yourself to take care of your business before the year winds down. You want to get started now because leaving it to last minute is no fun. And for special savings, be sure to use code AAA in the referral box at checkout. That's AAA for All About Android, obviously. That's LegalZoom.com and use code AAA for special savings. LegalZoom.com. Check it out. You will love it. Whether you're a business owner, even if you're not, even if you're just doing this, you know, for yourself, for your family, you're going to find a lot there. Super helpful stuff. LegalZoom.com. All right. We've got a lot of hardware this week. It's hardware heavy week right now. Let's do it. It's like I got to take my pick. Which direction do we want to go on the table here?
You got so many choices this week. That's the thing.
It's like, kind of crazy. It's kind of ridiculous.
Let's start with Sony. Let's do Sony.
Yeah. Let's do Sony. Only especially because I've been promising this review for a few weeks, and last week I think I was expecting to do it, and I was out. I ultimately had to miss the show. Which, by the way, thank you guys. You did an amazing job, and I'm sorry that I had to miss it. I wanted to be here, but anyways, thank you.
We missed you.
So Sony Xperia XZ3.
Sony still makes phones?
They're making lots of phones. You're gonna hear from some Sony emailers with that kind of attitude.
I know, I'm sorry. But to be fair, I haven't really seen one mentioned in a carrier in a while.
Yeah, well, I mean,
in the U.S.
And also, I think Sony, at least in the U.S., yeah, there's been a lot less, and we've talked about it in the past, there's been a lot less attention on Sony phones in the past, be it, you know, weird design choices like a lack of a fingerprint sensor on the back. Of course, this one has one. Or their really kind of boxy style that they stuck with for literally years. It seemed like their design aesthetic never changed very much. Now, thankfully, I feel like now they're really moving out of that. I reviewed the XZ2 Premium a few months ago, and this is yet another flagship that they're releasing this year. It's a step up from the XZ2, obviously. And they were starting to go down the road of kind of like the full glass body, kind of rounded edges. It still seemed kind of out of balance a little bit, really big and heavy and bulky. This time around, I have to say, I really like the design of this phone. It's just got a nice kind of sleek feel to it. It feels really nice in the hand. It's maybe a tad hollow in the center when you tap it, but I really like that they're finally embracing the rounded edges approach. They have a name for it, and I don't think I wrote it down, but of course they named their rounded edges something. Anyways, I just feel like the design is a big step up for Sony. If you have the need to swap out micro SDs, I'm not going to pull it out, but this tray slides out really easily. Usually you need a pin injector.
That's nice and convenient.
In order to do that. So you can do that with the SIM and the micro SD. So it kind of makes it a little bit more of like a media device that you could swap in a card and watch a bunch of movies on if you wanted to. My big gripe is that the fingerprint sensor is literally practically dead center in the phone, which if you hold your phone like this means that you're not lined up with it at all. It really requires you to kind of bend and be in a weird position in order to do the fingerprint sensor.
Smudge the camera is what's going to happen.
Exactly. Well, the camera is really where the fingerprint sensor should be.
Yeah.
So there's some
right there in the... Wow, it's low. It's low.
It's
there.
Really low. And I thought that I would get used to it, and I never got used to it. Because no matter what, you just have to change your grip in order to get to it with one hand.
And you're so used to the Pixel.
Yeah, and I mean, here, the other phone, you know, the Pixel, obviously, it's a lot higher than that. So, but anyways, 6-inch, 18:9 HDR OLED QHD Plus display, Snapdragon 845. You've got all the specs inside that are, you know, top-notch. 4 gigs of RAM, which seems a little low compared to other flagships, but I'd say this is going to work for like 99 or 95% of the things you're going to want to do. 19-megapixel rear-facing camera, single camera. So not a dual camera on the back, but it is capable of the 960 frames per second slow-mo, which are always a lot of fun to play around with. 3330 milliamp hour battery inside. It's IP65 and 68 rated, so it's really resistant to water and dust. It does have USB power delivery fast charge. So it's a pretty universal standard in there. I like seeing Sony do that. It also supports Qi wireless charging, support for high-res audio formats, including LDAC support, which is like high-res audio on Bluetooth devices, supported Bluetooth devices. So if you have complaints about Bluetooth audio not sounding quite as good, this is a way to get around that if you have a device that supports it.
You know whose headphones probably has them? Sony's.
Probably. I would imagine that makes a lot of sense. And actually, if you buy this on Amazon right now, you get their wireless earphones included. So it probably taps right into that. No notch on this display for all of you notch haters. This is one way to avoid it.
Sony's not going to just... No, they're not going to just add a notch. They're not that kind of company.
Not yet.
Notch yet.
Notch yet. Oh, I almost went there. I'm happy I didn't so that I could blame you for that.
Set me up for it.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it is running Pi as well. So that's a good thing, right? Like I've got Do Not Disturb mode running on Pi. I love that feature. Things just like... Yes, the design is full of rounded edges and the display and everything, but on the XZ2 Premium, I just noticed like certain menus would pop up and they'd feel like old version of Android suddenly out of the blue. And on this version, on the Pi version of Sony's interface, things are a lot more rounded. Things feel a lot more cohesive. It's still kind of Sony's UI, and you either love it or you don't. And
UI,
I understand if you don't
love it.
Yeah, here we go. Thank you. And as far as the camera, I think I included some pictures, just a short gallery of pictures. That's my wonderful face selfie camera. You can
flip Jason.
Through these while I talk. Sony has weird enhancements like. Sure, make your eyes really big and your neck really narrow.
But they're not so weird in this post-Snapchat world we live in now, unfortunately.
I guess not.
That's a
super
nice photo.
Artful. Yeah, not a bad photo. I mean, ultimately, I would say in this price category, I would expect more from the rear-facing camera. When I really kind of looked at some of these shots up close and kind of zoomed in and everything, it didn't look amazing. Mm-hmm. It's not. They're fine. You know, the pictures are fine. There's nothing that really stood out
and
blew
fine.
Me away.
Everything's fine. Yeah, and then you zoom in and it looks like an extremely compressed JPEG.
Yeah, it kind of breaks down when you zoom in, which you expect to a certain degree, but things were... fine. I wouldn't say it's the most amazing camera
Chloe,
in the world,
enhance.
But it's okay. Video records up to 4K, and like I said, super slow-mo is very nice. So I would say in general, I'm really happy with the design approach. The fact that there's not a notch here is going to make people happy. High-res audio support, wireless charging, Pi out of the gate. These are all... Oh, and this, by the way, this was me trying out the digital zoom to tie in with a story that we're going to talk about a little bit later with the Pixel and, you know, your ability to zoom in. I was trying it on this phone and it didn't hold up so well. I think it's because it's a standard digital zoom. It's not always going to look that great. On the downside, the fingerprint sensor location, the camera being kind of okay for the price range, and it's expensive for what you get. This phone is going to run you $899. You know, and more we're seeing phones kind of in that upper price range. This isn't quite cracking $1,000, but at $900, I would really hope that the camera was just banging, and it kind of wasn't. So yeah, I like where Sony's going. This is probably my favorite Sony phone that I have used on a regular basis. I've been using it now for like 3 weeks.
Just take all of that camera prowess that it has in the real camera world and just put it on a phone.
I mean, and I think they're going to do that. But if they come out with a premium version of this, they're probably going to do that. That's kind of what they did with the XZ2, and the XZ2 Premium was the souped-up camera approach. I didn't have as good a luck with their camera on that phone, but I've realized in retrospect I may not have put it into the proper kind of scenarios to test it out because everyone else seems to be super pro that camera. So I feel like I missed out on something, but
I feel like anyways. The problem is phones that put all of their stats into the camera just leave everything else behind. Like, yeah. You know, the UI is kind of janky, like the make and the feel. It's just they just dump all of their stats into the camera and they're like,
camera's really important.
No one cares about anything else. They're buying this phone for the camera.
Right.
Then no one buys the phone.
Well, life is all about choices, right? You choose where you want to focus, and it doesn't seem as if anybody has figured out well-roundedness as a solution for cameras for phones yet.
Yeah. Pieces here and there. Maybe OnePlus has. Do you think?
Maybe. Ron? Well, considering that I'm on Team OnePlus now, I was very curious and intrigued by the OnePlus 6T announcement that happened here in New York City yesterday. I did not attend. I couldn't. I had to work, but I wasn't even invited. But whatever.
You're not better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not that jealous. I didn't see our friends of the show like Josh Vergara having a great time. But whatever. So OnePlus 6T, really interesting. $549 for 6 gig of RAM, 128 gig of storage. They announced a carrier partnership with T-Mobile. For the first time ever, OnePlus available via T-Mobile and also finally supports Verizon. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine at work actually was saying who got the Pixel 3 and he got it because he couldn't get a OnePlus because it didn't support Verizon. Now they do. So if you're on Verizon, OnePlus can come into your world.
It's a two-week
Jason's
return
got it there.
Window.
Jason, I'm sorry, Flo?
I was just going to say it's a two-week return window if you buy a phone from Verizon.
Keep that in mind. So Jason's got the interesting phone in his hand. I'm very jealous. It's a 6.4-inch AMOLED display, 2340 by 1080 with a tiny, tiny little teardrop notch.
Yeah. I like their notch approach.
It's a teardrop the size of Johnny Depp's in Crybaby. basically, they got rid of the notification light to make the notch smaller, which I think is a great idea. I think it looks great. Yeah. In-display fingerprint sensor near the bottom in a fixed location, which is pretty cool.
Should I show this off?
Yeah, I'm super excited.
There it is. So you get a little indicator, then you go...
That's pretty cool. That's nice.
That was super cool.
That's innovation there, folks. and they've got the same dual rear-facing camera setup as the OnePlus 6, 60 megapixel at f1.7 and a 20 megapixel. So that's a familiar look for me, at least, with my OnePlus 6. It's running a Snapdragon 845. No more headphone jack. To make room for more battery. They made everyone has choices. You got a USB-C connector there instead of a headphone jack. It's running Android 9 Pie and no wireless charging and no water resistance. But it's $549. Yeah. So again, choices. That's our theme of this show today. Choices. So
remember when $600 used to be a flagship?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Man.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh man.
Boy, times have changed.
Ooh.
So I don't know, but this looks like a pretty decent phone for somebody looking for a mid-range, I think.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I like it. Yeah, and it feels good. I mean, obviously this kind, it has an aluminum, or the unit that I was shipped has an aluminum back. You can get it with a glass back as well. So if you want a full glass body, I believe you can get that with the 6T. But yeah, I really like how they treated the front. I think the teardrop, I'm not sure if they coined that or if people are just calling it a teardrop notch, but it's minimal enough, right? Like they really just kind of went around the camera with a little bit of a slope. I think I saw a leaked render of, I can't remember whose phone it is, but it had a notch up there that was literally the same shape as the camera and it looked super mechanical. So like adding that little slope kind of makes it feel a little bit more graceful instead of just like throwing a camera in the corner to go for minimalism. I don't know. My one complaint, and it's a super light complaint, is the fact that the way that they kind of gradually slope around the corners here and the UI elements kind of hugging it a little close for my taste. Sometimes it, depending on what's up there, it feels like it's almost about to get clipped or something. Mm-hmm. It feels like it doesn't have enough kind of padding around it. But that's a super like nitpicky sort of a thing that I noticed.
As an app developer, I would worry about tap targets in that top left and top right corner. Like if you have a back button up there or something, like if there's an app that takes up through the status bar, it would be kind of weird to make a user click off the screen. People have that problem with like the Galaxy S8 as well.
Yeah.
Where stuff will run off the left side of the screen. You kind of have to like reach around and uh-huh. and like kind of gently nudge the left side of the phone.
Yeah, it's like you're going off the display in order to get it to do the thing you want it to do. I mean, we're seeing so much more of this, though, the rounded display kind of cutout sort of thing.
Sloping off.
The sloping
that's
happening.
That's in style. So. That's the style, the UI
totally
style
is.
Now.
Totally
Even
is.
Like when on online interfaces, everything now is curved around the border. So it's like everything's got to have a curve.
Yep.
An important correction, as noted in the chat room, it's still running OnePlus's Oxygen OS, which is based on Android 9 Pi. So it is still the OnePlus flavor. But that said, I've got that running on my OnePlus 6, and it's got a lot of the Android Pi stuff that I would expect from it. So.
Oh, Jason,
yes.
Show us the in-display fingerprint scanner.
Oh, I can show that again? Let's see here. Okay, so see, I shake, and there it is, and then I go... Now, that one was fast. Now, I will say, sometimes it's slower than that. And then so, you know, probably it's just like, you know, it's an optical through the display fingerprint sensor. That little light dance that happens, that's not just a visual effect from what I understand. When that happens, it's actually lighting up
your fingerprint.
Right. So it's adding a little bit more dimension to the light that's being gathered through your fingerprint.
Making the
from
spiritual
what I understand.
Connection between your thumb and the phone.
You aren't actually unlocking your phone. Your spirit guide is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a ghost in the phone.
Can you unlock the phone when the screen is completely off, or do you kind of have to like yank your phone
you have
a little
to see
bit?
That. You have to see the little light up thing in order to
interesting.
Do it.
That's the only thing that would get to me, because I like having the physical fingerprint.
Yeah, so that you can just pop it off.
Yes.
I thought that was going to bug me a lot, but what I realized is the way it's set up right now, when I pick it up off the table, that's enough motion for it to then put the thing on the screen. You know what I mean? But it is nice. Like sometimes, like I remember with the Nexus, I think it was the Nexus 6P, when you're reaching into your pocket.
Yeah.
You knew where the fingerprint sensor was, so you could like have it unlocked by the time it was out of your pocket and you were looking at it, because there was that tactile aspect. And obviously, you eliminate that tactile part of it when it's underneath the display. That you just have that there.
But they did it.
Yeah. Well,
the first major U.S.
Yeah. Right.
To do it.
Right. There've been a lot. There've been some Chinese manufacturers specifically that have done the in-display fingerprint sensor so far. This is probably the first mainstream device. And now...
I was going to say, technically, they're also Chinese manufacturers.
Well, they are. But now they're available in T-Mobile stores. They're not available in Verizon stores, but they do work on the Verizon network now. But if you go into a T-Mobile store, you'll be able to find this, I think, starting tomorrow.
So they will work on Verizon. I wonder if that means Verizon will give them a code.
A code.
Yeah, because they have to, like, when you register your Verizon phone, it, like, says the phone that you're using, and if it doesn't recognize the phone, it says, like, unknown phone.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think from what I read, you would take the phone into a Verizon store, and they will certify it for the network and connect it to your account.
Probably for a $30
fee. I
don't know that for sure, but probably.
I gotta say, the T-Mobile thing, this is what we've said has been the problem with hardware manufacturers breaking into the market, is the carrier deal. So good job, OnePlus. I mean, this is what we've been saying they need to do. So I think the phone is great and the fingerprint sensor is neat, but the carrier stuff is the huge part of this announcement.
You're telling me this isn't a ghost? This is a ghost. There's a ghost in this phone. That's a ghost.
It's magic.
No,
magic.
That ghost is you trying to break into my phone here.
If you want me to unlock it, does that work?
It doesn't work upside down.
Oh, it doesn't work upside down. The loops have to be going the right way.
I would like to report a bug.
Anyways, so that's the OnePlus 6T. I'm going to do a review for New Screensavers. I think this weekend you're going to see my review. It'll be my full review.
So, lastly, last,
keeps going.
We'll cover the Pixel a little more a little later. But I'm just remembering the Verge headline that I saw yesterday about this phone. So I'm already like coming at it with a frame of mind. Just being honest. Yeah. But so this phone is a lot more than the phone we just looked at. It is $1,295, but it's the Red Hydrogen 1, so this does a lot of stuff.
Red Camera brand is a big deal in cameras and 4K and
8K. It's a big deal in Hollywood and in Toronto, where lots of CW shows are made. So this has a 5.7-inch wide quad HD display.
Extra wide.
Is that what the W stands for?
I love this so much.
Oh, you know what? I don't know what the WQH is.
Anyway, it's an LCD display with Leica tech for glasses-free 3D display mode. So you want to
see all that 3D
can
here.
Can you show,
I'll show
us?
You.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can't actually see it. But you can kind of see what's happening, right? When you see how it kind of snaps a little bit?
That's pretty cool.
So basically what it is, when you see it in person, when you see it on a camera like this, a 2D camera, you're not actually seeing, obviously, the 3D effect. You can see a little bit of that snapping. Yeah. Have you ever seen a lunchbox that has like a lenticular thing on it? And when you move your head, it basically alternates between the two kind of perspectives or whatever. That's basically what you're getting from a visual sense when you look at this phone, when you're looking at supported media like this. Kind of along that line.
I was trying to look up the definition of the display so that I could clarify on it. I apologize. So it's also got, where were we? Okay, so it's got cameras, right? Okay, so
it's
got cameras. So we know it's got glasses-free 3D display mode. We know that it's called the 4-view 3D format, so there are four pictures, I guess, that are displaying at a time. The 3D is only used in select apps with the 3D mode. The Android UI by default is two-dimensional.
Yep.
On the front, it's got a dual 8-megapixel front-facing camera, and on the back, it has dual 12-megapixel camera. It can shoot holographic clips and snaps to, add to that neato 3D effect. Inside, it's got a Snapdragon 835. It's also got pogo pins on the back for accessory expansion, though there are no accessories currently available, and you probably shouldn't try and connect any of the essential ones because that's from a different phone.
I don't think those are going to work. Don't do that.
Coming sometime, the red camera sensor with lens mount for attaching real lenses, and that's kind of what the pogo pins are there for. And there's Jason doing a cool 3D pan.
Oh, yeah, just,
Also, it is, by the way, the W does stand for wide. It's wide quad high definition, and it refers to the aspect ratio.
Oh, okay.
So the ratio is a bit wider than we're used to.
So here's what I find so interesting about this 5.7 inch display. This thing feels like a mammoth. It feels so much bigger than
an old phone. It looks like an old Sony phone, if I do say.
It kind of does.
And
it has these little finger indentations on the sides that I don't know.
Grip it,
really,
man! You gotta grip it.
Are really very helpful.
It really looks like the closest to an extreme phone that we have right now.
OtterBox made a phone.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, listen, you're a content creator. You're a content creator. You're in the field. You need a phone that can keep up with you, right?
It needs to blast through rocks and concrete.
But my main question, so if I'm a filmmaker who uses a red camera all the time, Do I want this to be my phone? Is this the red experience moved out to a phone?
Huge.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Ron. I think that's the market, right? Is you're in the red universe. You buy into the potential of this truly mobile phone being a alternative camera if you have the right modular camera to plug into it when it's available, though it's not right now. Mind you, I just unboxed this a couple of hours ago, so it's far too early for me to give any official takes on it. But out of the box, $1,300 is a lot of money. For this phone, it's really hard to understand if the value proposition is at all.
I was going to say, if we could do a hand for scale, because Parth has found
I have little baby hands, and this phone would not work for me. That's just sad. Either me or the phone, I can't really decide who, honestly.
The phone is bigger than your hand.
Yeah, I would not be able to hold it in my hand.
But when you're out in the field, it doubles as a weapon.
Yeah.
I could beat down jaguars with this, I think.
Ooh. Oof. Wow, that was...
Just make sure you're filming it when you do.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Would look really cool in 3D.
A 3D beatdown. I'm just going to add this to my phone pile.
It's by far the biggest of the three that we've got.
There's more digging into to be done with the red hydrogen one. I only just opened it earlier.
Oh, boy. I'm going to hand your stack of phones back.
Thank you. I can't wait to put them all in my pockets, which is the way it was when I walked into the studio.
You're just walking around with phones in your, just weighing down your pockets.
Yeah, you know, it's what I do for a living, so.
It's true.
I don't know. The 3D effect is interesting. I don't know if it's something that you base an entire expensive
I'd rather just buy a lunchbox that does it. Yeah. One scene.
Totally.
I'm fine with just one scene.
We should all buy a lunchbox with a lenticular scene on it. The good old days. Anyways, there will be more, I'm sure. I will have more to say after spending some time with the red hydrogen.
If only you had a camera
one.
To test it with. Like a red that camera. Would,
see? If they cool. actually had the camera like connector with this.
Or like an actual red camera, way. Which I realize is very expensive.
Yeah, it's probably not going to happen. Although, sure, red, send me a camera. I don't even know how I'd test a red camera. But I'd play with it. Yeah. You know, I'd have fun with it, sure. Why not? All right, let's take a break, Ron.
Let's take a break. Why don't we? And let's thank our next sponsor, DigitalOcean. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with Droplets, virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can choose from standard or CPU-optimized Droplets and customize from there. And the greatest thing is that DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. They've got industry-leading price-to-performance, and you can access the compute resources you need at the lowest rate, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you'll pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. So included at no additional cost, you get their 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise SSDs, their easy-to-use API, and it's really just a dream. It's a perfect platform for developing that app or that business that you want to get started out there. And it's the reason why over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. I'm working on a project now. It's hosted on DigitalOcean. Why? Because it allows us to be flexible and it doesn't break the bank. So sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of All About Android, supporting developers, supporting businesses, and supporting the show. Thanks, DigitalOcean.
Thank you, DigitalOcean. All right, no bumper needed because we're staying in hardware for just a few more things. This is a hardware-heavy week.
It is a hardware-heavy week, and we've got a phone with no notch. I know, it's a surprise. This one's from Xiaomi, which is known for notching. So they announced the new Mi Mix 3. It's got a true full screen OLED 1080p display, 93.4% screen to body ratio with, again, no notch. So there's nothing interrupting you from getting all that sweet, sweet screen, which I think will make some people very happy. It's got dual 24 megapixel and 2 megapixel front facing cameras hidden in the slide out mechanism on the front. So, yes. Oh.
Sorry, that's the sound of the slide out. I don't know if it actually makes a sound.
It's also got dual 12 megapixel cameras on the back, and on the inside it runs on a Snapdragon 845, and it comes with up to 10 gigs of RAM, which is quite a first, and up to 256 gigs of storage, which I'm sure will make a lot of people who are investing in, like, this could be very well be some people's only, like, major hardware buy for the year. And so I think that's great to offer that much storage. It starts at 3,299 yuan or $475, which is a lot cheaper than the OnePlus 6.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone remember the LG chocolate?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting flashbacks of that. One of my friends used the little slidey thing so much that the mechanism broke and you could just like kind of flip it around. And so I wonder if that'll happen with this phone.
What was it? Was it an Oppo phone that also did the kind of slide? It may have been Vivo. I don't know.
I think it was both of them, honestly.
They all kind of blend together. But they did the slide out thing, and I don't know. I haven't seen it in person, so it's hard to form an official full-on opinion about it, but I only envision bad things with like a mechanical slide out thing. Like over time,
Yeah,
there's just so much potential for that to break down.
Past that.
Yeah.
Like, we tried that. Yeah. It didn't really work out that well. People broke their phones. Then you had, like, these two separate phone components that kind of, like, just were
I love it. Together. I want things to fold out like a transformer. Do everything. Do whatever you can, you know, man?
I do miss those days. I do miss the days of folding around the phone. But it's true. They would wear down by the end. Like, the camera cover that would cover your lens on the back of the camera. Granted, it was only a 2-megapixel camera, but that was the only camera I had on me, darn it. Can't have a scratched camera lens.
Or flip phones that when you first get them, they snap.
Yeah.
And then like a year and a half later, they like hang halfway open.
Yeah.
And you try and close it and it'll still just kind of. Yeah. Yeah. We've all been there. The LG chocolate.
We don't know what we want, I think. I think we're just trying to figure it out at this point.
I want a headphone jack. I know that.
Oh. Yeah.
You're a holdout for the headphone jack.
I mean, I have a Pixel 3, so like I've betrayed my own kind. Yeah. But like
before your Pixel 3, what did you have?
I had Pixel 1 with a headphone jack.
Oh, okay.
That's why I didn't upgrade to the 2. I was like, I will never give you up. And then I gave it up.
You got to move on, man. It's the future.
At least they give you dongle and earphones with this one.
Hooray.
Hey, why don't we talk about Pixels? We're already talking about
it. What a segue.
Okay, so the other phone that I have here is my Pixel 3 XL, and I realize you guys talked about the Pixel 3 last week.
Yeah, we did a rundown. We did a show off.
Yeah, so this is the Pixel 3 XL, the taller version of that that you've probably already seen plenty of pictures and stuff with. But,
wow, you know, that is significantly bigger.
Shows you the size difference between the 3 and the 3XL. Also shows you the cavern, the cavernous notch up there at the top. Go ahead and side by side that with OnePlus's notch, and you see not only a shallowness, but also a narrowness.
Hide a lot
OnePlus.
Of stuff up there.
You could sell that notch as an apartment in San Francisco for thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you'd get a couple of grand for this.
Yeah.
Move some people in there. I got the clearly white version. I actually really like it. It's got the nice next bit style button.
Your mint button. It's more minty in person. It looks a little washed out on camera.
Yeah. It's a little sharper here in person. So I just wrote down some thoughts because we don't need to rehash everything, but I've had thoughts playing with it. So I can rattle these off real quick. I like the glass back. While it feels nice, you guys are totally right. It has a hollowness.
So it's on the XL as well.
Yeah, there's a hollowness to this that I do not remember
hardcore
from the 2 or the 1. And I don't. It's something that I check on phones now. Is kind of like how solid does it feel? And this one does not pass
the ocean in its USB-C.
It's like it echoes when I tap it. It goes.
It does.
Now it doesn't really totally echo, but it. Basically, it should. It should be this nice hollow reverb sound.
The sound echoes a little bit against the hollowness in the back.
True.
I think that's the point of it.
I like the colored power button, but as Bleak was saying in chat earlier, that's not a feature. Bleak's particularly grumpy today. The notch is deep. I don't really care, to be honest. I'm pretty blind to the notch at this point. Although when I do side by side with the OnePlus, then I realize how it could be, and I kind of wish it was this. But I get it. They've got a couple of sensors in there versus OnePlus's single sensor. You know, they've also got a speaker there, so I get it. It does feel a little lower than it needs to be, but whatever. My eyes don't really see it very much in daily use. Super res zoom. You were saying last week that you weren't that impressed by super res zoom. And I got to say, I think I put some camera samples in there for super res zoom. I would say that, so this is all the way out. And then we'll go in one step. I think I did all the steps on this one.
Oh, wow.
That's going in one. Like, obviously, when you get to the last two where it's super duper close, if you really scrutinize those, you start to see this kind of like watercolor effect or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good, actually.
Pretty solid for considering how far away I was on those trees. The fact that this was all digital zoom, like you see a lot of details in those leaves, and you're probably not going to zoom in even further on this digital zoom, so it's not going to be as much of an issue. But
Flo was very critical of the digital zoom, so I'm curious what she thinks of these.
I wonder if it's because you took it out in daylight. I just don't. I don't like the. I just have here a picture of my cat. You're not going to be able to see it in the camera above, but I just don't. I don't think it looks like when you zoom up close, you can just see the breakdown of the pixelization.
Yeah,
it's just not something that I can. And this is done like underneath the skylight in like the dark of my stairwell. And I just like this is not something that I would feel comfortable putting a filter over and sharing on social media, though I appreciate having access to that.
Yeah.
So for like my own memory making, I would definitely use a super zoom, but I don't know if I would use it immediately to make a picture to show with the world.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. Like I played around. Like this is another one. I was at a gas station. There was a sign across the street. So I was like, how close can I get on this sign where you can still totally read it, right turn only? And you start to see a little bit of that like white around the black writing, kind of some signs of digital zoom artifacting around it and everything. But definitely better than without, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And if you go only two steps, I would say, I think it gives you like five different steps of digital zoom. If you go in two, pretty darn good.
Yeah.
It's when you get to the 3, 4, 5 that you start to see it, but I guarantee you it's better than without.
Oftentimes you only need the 1 and 2 and not so much the 3 and 4.
Right.
Because if you're that far for the 3 and 4, then you might want to get a little closer with a phone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yep.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you're spying on someone, use a camera lens. It's the best way to do.
Or don't spy.
Don't spy, actually. It's illegal in many states.
Word of advice, don't spy.
Bad idea.
The thing I was realizing was that the image stabilization when you're zooming is really, really nice.
Yeah.
I've tried zooming on other cameras. I tried zooming on my Pixel 1 and I was just like shaking it around by accident. I didn't even realize I was doing it versus on this. There was like a delay to my zoom shaking, which is a really nice addition.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Have you used call screening yet?
Oh my God, I've used it 7 times in the last 2 days.
Really?
Yes. I'm getting so many spam calls. And actually, Mark Bursteiner online, when I posted today on Twitter, he's like, well, I wonder if the bots, you know, notice you're an active line. Because technically, I'm answering the phone.
Right.
Versus not answering it where I would just block it immediately. But I've been really satisfyingly using this bot to, like, tell other bots to, like, go away. It feels like...
see, I had one call come through and I got the option and it seemed like more work for me to do that than to just let it go to voicemail if it was important. So I just let it go. What about
someone? Someone asked me that actually. They said, as I was explaining how it works, and like, doesn't it seem like it's more work?
Yeah.
Couldn't you just hang up and answer the phone and hang up? But
yeah. Or I mean, my whole MO now is like, if it's really that important, you'll leave me a message. And if it's actually important, then I'll listen to it.
Then you'll text me in about 7 seconds afterward anyway.
Right.
Also true. But I don't even remember the PIN number to my voicemail. So don't leave me a voicemail. I don't know it anymore.
Your mailbox is full. Have you used it?
The only people who call me are my partner and my mom. And neither of one of those people I feel comfortable just like screening because both of those lead to consequences for me.
Yeah. Probably a good idea.
Yeah. So I haven't had a chance to play with
it.
I don't know
if it'll allow you to screen the call for somebody who's in your contact list. I feel like it only does it when there's a number it's not in your contact list.
Right.
And so I use it because sometimes I get PR calls on my phone and like I've had that number forever. So sometimes I do have to answer it. And this way I can figure out like if it's for real or for fake. And more often than not, it's for fake.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to.
Although
today.
I also wonder if somebody was legitimately calling me, but they got warded off by the robot on the phone and they were like, whoa, what is this? This is scary.
Or maybe they wanted to talk to a robot, and so then they'll call back and be like, this is the number you call when you want to talk to robots. Probably not.
I wish I could program my own bot to like answer the phone for me. That would be awesome.
Well, you know, we've got an Android developer here that could probably make that work for you.
I don't work on voice actions. That's a completely different team.
I will say that I've encountered some really interesting, and by interesting, I mean annoying oddities in things. Like voice commands is just one example that I've come up with where I will pull it out and be like, you know, hold down my assistant button and be like, navigate to blah, blah, blah. And then I'll wait and I'll wait and I'll wait. And then it will pull up a search of blah, blah, blah instead. And I'll be like, no, navigate to it. And it will pull up a contact on my contacts list or whatever. And I don't know if it's
Assistant on my phone, or if it's my phone or the Pixel 3 or if it's something else, but I know it wasn't doing that on my other phone, and now it is on this one, and it annoys the hell out of me.
I actually noticed that on the drive up here. I was borrowing someone else's car, and so my phone wasn't like connected to the car or anything, and so I wanted to have my music playing just from my phone, and I was saying, hey hot word, and my phone was like, la 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 la, I have no idea what's going on. And then eventually, so I like reached over, like, you know, squeezed the phone to trigger it, and it would just not listen to me.
Yeah.
And when I eventually got it playing music, then it just wanted to play music and not listen to me to tell it to like skip the song or whatever. It was a very frustrating.
Becoming sentient.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, you don't really want to do that. You want to focus on the driving.
Yeah, it's passive aggressive robot now. Great. Thanks, assistant. Yeah, so little things like that can be annoying. Overall, I would say I'm whelmed. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm not underwhelmed. I'm whelmed with the Pixel 3 right now. And I think I expected to be more whelmed.
I didn't need to upgrade.
It's the Pixel 2++.
Yeah.
The really big advances are all software. And I mean, Google makes no bones about that, right? Like, they're all in on software and AI improvements and everything like that.
That's where the power comes from.
So then from a design perspective, it's kind of like, yeah, it's another Pixel phone. So it's fine. Everything is fine. That's another
you
title.
You buy it so that you don't have to get someone else's interpretation of what Android UI looks like.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's stock Android. You know it's going to update fast.
It's Google Android.
It's Google
flavored.
What
I like to call
it's
it
Google flavored Android.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. So anyways, but are you liking your phone?
I really like the Pixel. From going from a Pixel 1 to a Pixel 3, I feel... is definitely more of
that's
a leap.
That's a big jump.
Yeah, I get like the now playing feature, which has been really useful inside of Lyft rides. The camera is just a dream come true. I thought my Pixel 1 camera is good, and all of my friends got Pixel 2s, and they were sharing all these photos. I'm just like, man, my photos look like crap. Like you never realize what you have until someone else outdoes you, and I realize that sounds really petty, but it's totally true.
Yeah.
I really do like it.
Good.
It's a good phone.
I think coming from the one especially, that makes sense. I would say that coming from a 2 to a 3, there's less incentive there.
It was just a lot more money.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, but 1 to 3, absolutely.
I do like the color chassis, though. I like that that's the thing that's happening. Finally, they caught on.
Kind of the unique kind of color approach.
Sure. Here in America,
even though with white,
colors.
Like the only thing they did with color is they made that button. Everything else
that
is
was
normal.
Weird that they didn't make... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, sometimes all you need is just a little splash of color. That's all you need.
All you need is button. Well, we were talking a little bit about the camera, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit more in our single app story today.
We need a bumper that just says app.
App. Could you scratch out the S on this,
scratch out the S.
This bumper, please?
Anyway, so speaking of the camera and the Pixel, an upcoming update to the Google Camera app for the Pixel series is expected to bring a new night sight mode for shooting in extremely low light situations. Google announced this feature at the Made by Google event that I attended. Still as yet unreleased officially.
Bragger.
XDA has an early version of the app, and I gotta say, the results are really impressive. We were looking at this. I was looking at this at work with a friend of mine who has the Google Pixel 3, and it just it looks like it's gonna be could be a total game changer if it lives up to the promise of the announcement. So,
it does. It lives up to it. Yeah,
there it is.
So take off motion because this is just playing the little motion shots. So take that off. This is so we went to a haunted house over the weekend. I took my 8-year-old daughter to her very first haunted house, and it was a blast.
Boy.
While we were waiting in line, this guy came along with this amazing puppet. And anyway, so at this moment in time, it's pretty dark outside. I wouldn't say that it's like fully dark. There's still a little bit of light, but it was really low light. This was before
autumn dusk.
Yeah. And then if you go to the next one, this is after. Like that's night. Mode.
That's what? Literally night and day difference.
Literally night and day difference.
Now, I'm so sorry.
But it's true. I mean, it really is. Like, that looks like daytime. And I get it when people are saying, yeah, but sometimes I want my night shots to look like nighttime. This does not look like nighttime. But I would like my night shots to look good. And if my night shot looks bad, then I would take this over my bad night shot.
Yeah, you want it to look like how Monty Python used to do their night shots, which is during the day, but with a filter over it, a blue filter. You
yeah,
want your
right.
Like that.
Right. This, I mean, it's almost pitch black outside when I took this. Meanwhile,
that's amazing. That's not real.
You can see the black lights.
You can see, you see all the, yeah, no, this is real. This,
this is real.
This is real life right here. This is real life. You know, all the light that you see in the sky, like, it just kind of blows me away, like, how long that must have been open or whatever Google's doing with their magic, because it was not that light outside.
It is magic.
It was almost pitch black.
Because back in the day when the first was the LG V10 came out, I took it out to do some night shots with it in the long exposure time. And after just 30 seconds or even after like 12 seconds, night looks like day in the photo after, you know, after it's shot. And so I'm just super impressed by how is Google doing that in that short amount of time and not on a tripod.
Well, yeah, that's what's so cool. So kill all the lights in here because I've got the UI loaded up.
Kill the lights.
I'm curious to know if we can get it dark enough to demonstrate this. So, okay, I'm going to close my laptop. All right, things are... So I'm going to go over there.
Delightfully spooky.
Burke is running behind us for... Oh, I see.
Moving the liquid
okay,
from the floor.
So I'm going to... I mean, looking in this room, like it's, you know, looking with our eyes, it's light enough, but this almost looks like dusk. So I'll go ahead and take that picture. You can see it's
hold still.
It's doing its little hold still thing.
You can't see it, but it says hold
still. And then when I pull this up, let's see here. Well, there's Alex. So it totally brightened it up and it looks kind of normal, you know, it even looks darker on the video that we're seeing.
It does not look that blue in person, by the way. That's true.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool, though. Crazy. I mean, it works really well. And you take it outside and you...
It was a rough transition.
This is a great mode for Halloween. Yeah, rough transition. Great mode for Halloween, though. When you go trick-or-treating, if you have this APK installed, you can take some really cool pictures that normally would just be like a couple of lights, like sharp lights on black. With this, you'll see the scene.
I always feel weird like installing someone's like random APK. They're like, oh, I only changed these two lines of code. And I'm like, did you though?
Obviously be wary of that. I tend like when XDA or, you know, when it's on APK Mirror, which is Android Police, when they're the ones that are
advertising
vouching for it, I tend to be trusting of that. Everyone make your own decision as far as that's concerned. I'm not saying that I'm 100% right. I'm just saying that that's my trust level, is that I trust XDA and I trust APK Mirror / Android Police. So
I'm just paranoid. Okay. I'm okay admitting that.
Good to be. Yeah, absolutely. You work in security.
Android.
Of course you should be paranoid.
I know how all of the APK sausage is made. Like,
yeah. Good. I'm happy you mentioned that because that's really important.
Sausage
people need
is
to make
made
that
out of
decision.
All of the parts.
Yes.
So anything could be in the sausage.
Anything.
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 All right. We got an email, Flo.
We do have an email. And it's actually about last week's riveting discussion about innovation. So we're going to go back to that real quick. And the reason we probably got a lot of feedback about this is because, well, it was a pretty big discussion. So this one comes from Todd. Todd writes in, I thought a lot about your innovation discussion and found it interesting that you didn't bring up the elephant in the room that has been stifling technology innovation for the past several decades, batteries. Battery technology has certainly advanced slowly over the years, but it has always been the one hurdle and thorn in the side that most companies have to deal with, be it phones, automobiles, drones, or anything else that requires the immediate and long-lasting power that we need, including Furbies. They also had battery problems. It has quelled advancement in technology and been the anchor dragging innovation to a crawl. You guys were all contemplating what will be the next big innovation in tech, and I certainly don't have the answer. However, my vote is that the first company that finds a power source that changes the world will be to secure the next innovation that changes our lives. A quote unquote Tony Stark solution, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And I agree.
Oh, completely agree.
I agree.
If we can get battery technology to a new level, it enables a lot of other things to actually happen.
But we're up against like actual chemistry and elements and like real science.
Yeah.
And
through today's paradigm, 50 years from now, Ron, we'll be on a different paradigm. We'll be like, oh, remember when we didn't know of this thing that changed everything?
I feel like part of it is
maybe it's
phone manufacturers thinking. And everyone else are just bowing to consumer demands. Everyone wants their phone to charge in 35 minutes, right? And when you have a phone that charges in 35 minutes, you literally, like from a physics perspective, can't have as long-lasting of a battery. When you dump power in and dump power out, the battery just cannot be
it's
as
not
long-lived.
Efficient.
Well, and let's also remind that a couple of years ago, not very long ago, more than a couple of years ago, but not very long ago, fast charging was not a thing. That was a big innovation. That allowed us to take the batteries that we're used to having and suddenly allow them to charge up in like a quarter of the time that we were used to before. So while they weren't able to hold more capacity for the same size, still, now it only takes 15 minutes to get 8 hours of use out of it. And that did not used to be the case. That was a big step.
I've never actually experienced that, though. 15 minutes of charging has never meant 8 hours for me. It meant
use air
quotes an hour and a half. So,
oh, man, no. Well, I guess it depends on how you're using it. Like, hour and a half of staring at it and pawing at it, maybe so. 8 hours of, like, extended time while you're out and about not using it with the display on the entire time, that might be a different scenario.
Maybe.
But I mean, I do know that when my phone is down to 30% and I plug it in for 20 minutes and I pull it off the charger, it's at like 70%. That feels like a big win, you know, because I remember the days where it took 3 to 4 hours to charge up your battery, and that really sucked. So that was a big step, I think. It's a good alternative anyways. All right, let's take a break. Thank the sponsor, and then we'll review some apps real quick because apparently we're going long today. apologies, Partha. I didn't warn you about that. We tend to do that, and I'm sorry. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Obviously, belts aren't the kind of thing that, you know, if you think about too often. You get a belt, you wear it, and you move on with your life. Usually, just when you hit that last hole on the strap and you have to struggle to make it fit, maybe that's when you think about it. Slide belts don't have holes like your old belt. Instead, they use a patented ratchet design that adjusts precisely to you as you slide it through. I can actually show you here. I have, wouldn't you know, it's a slide belt buckle with the Twit logo on it. And basically, when you're wearing it, you go ahead and slide this through. Sorry, when it's not on your waist, it's a little stranger to do it. But when you pull it through, it like snaps into place and it doesn't come back out. The only way you get it out, you lift that up and voila, it comes right out. It's actually really great. Once you start using this ratchet system, it's kind of feels fumbly to go to the system that you're probably used to using. They use that patented design, 32 adjustment options, so it's much more comfortable than any other belt that you've worn. You can find just the right fit instead of being locked into those pre-spaced holes. Such an improvement over the traditional belt because you can easily remove the buckle and mix and match with other straps. You can bring in all sorts of customization options, versatility, all of that. Slide belts offer a wide selection of straps from full grain and top grain leathers to high quality canvas and animal friendly vegan. Slide belts can be worn casually around the house, at the office, or out for date night, of course. You can dress them up, dress them down, however you like. It's also a great travel belt. They're easy to remove while going through security. You just lift up that snap and pull it right out. If you're still not convinced, Slide Belts offers a 1-year warranty, free exchanges, and no hassle returns. Slide Belts are a great gift option. Obviously, we have the holiday season coming up here. Many options available for men, women, and kids, from unisex survival belts. I actually have the survival belt here, which is kind of over the top, but hey, you know, survival. You don't want to take any chances. Yeah, there's a knife in there. What?
Whoa.
No big deal. and all sorts of other options. There's colorful belts for kids, skinny belts for women. You name it. They cover the gamut of all the different types of belts that you can find, including, yes, a belt with a knife inside. Coming soon, Slide Belt watches with swappable watch bands for ultimate customization. Also, before you check out, make sure and click on their gift sets tab for some great offers. But please note that these sets are already discounted and our offer here does not apply to those, so just keep that in mind. If you're ready for a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use code TWIT, that's TWIT, at checkout, and you'll receive 20% off your order. That's slidebelts.com/twit, and don't forget to use code TWIT for 20% off of your order. And we thank Slide Belts for their support of All About Android. And now, it's time for the arena. Let's do it.
So many enter, but only one lives.
Android Arena.
Android Arena.
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 Twit.to/AAApoll392 is where you went last week to vote for your favorite app, and it looks like Fog of World won with 51%.
Woo!
Was that yours,
Ron? Pretty cool. Yeah, it's very cool. Very cool gaming maps thing.
I tried to figure out how to export my Google Map data after that, and I'm still trying to figure it out.
Hmm. Oh, I figured it out. It's a little tricky, but I can show you how to do it, Flo, if you want.
Screencast that. Fog of War, World. It's easy to say that. Get that mixed up. I'm sure that happens all the time. Fog of World, 51%. Second place, Migraine Buddy at 31%. Third place, Terrarium Garden Idol at 18%. I thought that was a cool looking app.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So those results were 43 weeks. We are less than 10 arenas left. Guests have 129 points in first place. I am in second place with 111. Jason's in third with 99 points. And Flo is in last with 90 points. Still wondering when Flo will be mathematically eliminated. It's got to be soon.
Who cares if I'm mathematically eliminated? I'm staying in this game and I'm never leaving.
Yeah.
Underdog spirit.
The question is, when are all of us mathematically eliminated?
Yeah.
I guess so, kicking our butt this year.
That was my question.
No pressure.
Yeah, right. So how does this work again when one of us is out? Does that mean I go first?
Yes.
Because I'm the loser that wasn't here last week.
And the winner, which is Ron, goes last.
Okay.
And then this, okay, so the I will go first. The actual loser, which is me,
will go second. Okay.
And Parth goes third.
All right. So then I will go first. This will not take long. This is an app that I've been hearing about for the last couple of years from my wife. She's been big into meditations, and I've been getting into it myself probably the past 8 or 9 months now. For whatever reason, I hadn't really checked this out, but I like it, and it's kind of got a unique spin to it. The app in the Play Store is called 21 Day Meditation Experience, but you'll find it if you search for Oprah and Deepak. They do a bunch of kind of collaborative meditative kind of packages, and they all focus on certain things. The reason I'm bringing it up here is because you can buy these packs, and don't get me wrong, I think Oprah's awesome, but when it comes to meditation, I might be thrown off a little bit if Oprah Winfrey is like guiding me through
and
a guided meditation.
And you get meditation. Yes.
Like, that might be a little strange to me, but I'm checking this one, and maybe it won't. I will definitely check it out, and I have an open mind. But my wife told me that a new 21-day meditation kind of pack began, and it's free yesterday, and it's just Deepak. So I was like, you know what? I'll check this out and finally check it out. So basically, every once in a while, they will post a 21-day kind of guided meditation on a particular topic, and all of their packs kind of focus on different thing, like true success, manifesting true success, or miraculous relationships. They have all these different things. You could buy those packs individually. Every once in a while, they give you one for free for 21 days to kind of check it out. This one in particular is called Energize Your Life, Secrets for a Youthful Spirit. And these are all around 20-minute meditations. And the idea is that on day one, you would start and you'd go through, right? Tomorrow's day three. So tomorrow morning when I wake up and normally do my meditation, I would pop that on. And so far, so good. I actually really like it. Deepak has a nice voice. You know, when it comes to guided meditations, you sound is very important, right? Like it's guided. So you want some really good kind of like, you know, potentially some good music as kind of a backdrop, something that's not too distracting. Their voice, you know, was it recorded well? Is it recorded using a nice microphone? These are things that I care about. And I imagine other people who are doing these guided meditations probably care about it too, because when it sounds bad, it's distracting and it pulls you out of the experience. So anyways, I'm getting into this and I'm actually really, really enjoying it so far. And I find these really valuable. It really starts my day off in a really great place to kind of have a little bit of mindfulness at the beginning. I'm just really getting into it. And so if I can spread the word, then great. Do a search for Oprah and Deepak, or do a search for 21-day meditation experience. This started, like I said, yesterday. So for the next 21 days, it's going to go through this whole pack and kind of focus on a different aspect of the overarching theme of energizing your life, you know, with a youthful spirit and whatever that means for you. But, you know, maybe it'll improve your outlook or make it just feel like your glass is more full than normal. And if so, then great. I'm happy that I could pass the word to you. So 21-day meditation experience, Deepak and Oprah. Check it out. And I hope that you do. All right, Flo.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be. Let me launch my app.
All right, you're up.
So I have been really into hanging out by myself, which is like a thing, I guess. And so one of the things I like to do is I like to go watch shows. I like to watch bands play and those kind of shows, like bands play and whatever, and go to shows. The venues I like to go to are a lot smaller usually, but than this app brings you to. Sorry, I'm like trying to do seven things at once. But I like it because now that there are a bunch of big acts coming into town, like, you know, Ariana Grande, I can look for some, you know, affordable tickets. So I kind of found this as I was looking for another like ticket finding app, because I use apps like Songkick and I use the Spotify like concert integration to tell me what's coming up. But sometimes you just kind of want to know something somewhere else. You just kind of want a search engine for it without having to do a bunch of prerequisites. So this app is nice because you can actually buy tickets through it and it'll give you the best deal. Supposedly. I mean, allegedly, it'll give you the best deal. I will say that the tickets I found on here are very much, scalper prices. So very much the last minute kind of prices. And I know the font is really small, but hopefully I can try and show you what this is like. So for instance, you want to search events? Who would we like to search for? I don't know. I put some search terms in here already. So a venue I really like to go to, it's kind of a bigger venue, is Fox Theater in Oakland. So kind of write that down.
Good venue.
And it's a great venue, very pretty, very easy to get to. And you can just look down the listing of, and I apologize, I don't know how well you can all see this, but I'll read off some of you. You've got Van Morrison tickets for $56. So you just click on that. And then if you were logged in, which I am not logged in right now because I haven't actually purchased anything through this app yet, but I have read up on the app and they've been around for a while, and they actually have, they don't have any fees, which is one of the reasons that this app is pretty popular, is because you're basically buying it directly. It's like StubHub in that sense. You're basically buying it directly from the person that's selling it without having to pay them any extra. And so what you can do is you can look for tickets and it'll give you this relative grade on the side to let you know how good the deal is. So the really bad deals are at the bottom, right? So we've got a mezzanine level for $194 a piece. That's a lot of money to see Van Morrison. That's a lot of money. especially, you know, all the way in the back. Or
not if they're your favorite the mezzanine band is. Ever.
Also true. Very true. But so if you wanted to buy that, you could log in and then put in your credit card info and go that way. You can choose the delivery. You can choose by delivery of the ticket. So some people maybe want to email it to you. Some places you have to like get it through whatever, a code or will call. And so that'll factor that in for you. And there's also like a payment plan that you can do through this, but I would not suggest that just because it's never good to go into debt for anything. I mean, that's just the lesson we learned in 2008 as a society. If you've got something coming up further down the line, let's see, let's go to Las Vegas. We like to go to Las Vegas. Let's just search by Las Vegas. And we've got Cirque du Soleil. Oh, Mike Shinoda, the DJ from Linkin Park, is playing in Las Vegas. And apparently we've got tickets for $16. Okay. All right.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable because it's seven. I don't know why it said that, but it's $35 a piece. So you can go in, get tickets as you want. Continue to buy. It'll be tell you your final total per ticket. It'll tell you how you're going to get them. So the seller notes will tell you if there's service fees, in-app scan. And then you just sign in with Facebook or your email and you go do that. So it's just kind of a easy way to look around if you're just kind of bored. You want to figure out what's coming up. Also, there's if you do referrals, you can get free tickets. You can like things. I have favorited Ariana Grande and Lady Gaga just for kicks to see what comes up. So, you know.
Standard things to favor.
Standard things to favor.
$16 tickets to Ariana.
No, she's $95 in Sacramento and $188 if I want to go see her in Vegas. And honestly, I'd rather go to Vegas than Sacramento.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sacramento. Yeah. But anyway, so that's TickPic. It's just no-fee tickets on your phone.
Nice.
New way to go out, find things. Nice thing about it is I've been able to find like sold-out show tickets. But, you know, you're going to find things for a lot more expensive.
Yeah, it's going to be
more scalper prices.
Exactly. You're the one that missed out on the
But if you're in a bind sale, and so. You really want to go see Van Morrison, there you go.
There you go. Your source for Van Morrison tickets is TickPic.
By the way, I am looking for Ariana Grande tickets.
Just putting that out there.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
All right. Excellent stuff. Parth, what you got?
All right. So I enjoy being up to date on news, but I don't like going to CNN. I don't like going to MSNBC, any of these sites, because there's always a lot of political stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And I get all my politics through Facebook, so it's fine. I don't actually mean that, I swear. But it's nice to get a source of news about what's happening in the tech community, what's happening in the science community, that doesn't necessarily have a political bent, that's filtered, that has... It feels like there's value to what you're reading, as opposed to just, you know, reading think pieces and he said, she said, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the app that I'd like to show is called Materialistic. It's a Hacker News reader, which...
Wrong camera.
There we go.
Thanks.
There it is. So it's a Hacker News reader, which is a website run by Y Combinator, which is a venture capital firm. This app is not like, so they have an open API. Anyone can develop an app against it, but I've looked at a lot of different Hacker News readers, and this one is definitely my favorite. It uses kind of a Material Design One theme. You can see, you know, the menus. If you go in, you can look at comments, and the comments are color coded by the depth that they're at. I'm trying to find someone who's like written an in-depth comment. I'll have to go to another article. Maybe one about Facebook. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, here we go. So you can see like all the different comment levels. And, as you go deeper into the comment nest, you get all of these different colors and everything's color coded appropriately. The nice part about this app is that it kind of just gets out of your way as you want to read things. Everything is super configurable, so you can change the font size, which I have set to small, which is not very, very useful for demoing. Let me try that again. Yeah, so you can change the font size. You can change the color. You can change whether you want the comments to automatically expand or not. You can change the threading indicators. You can even, he has this really cool navigation thing where you can, like, I don't know if you can see that down at the bottom. There's this little nub that showed up. It's like a floating action button that you can use as like a D-pad on your phone. And so you can jump around.
So if
using
you only
that.
Have your thumb there.
Yeah. So if you're a person with only a thumb, it's still a useful app for you.
It's like a little rolly on the Nexus One.
It's really cute.
I miss it.
The thing about this is although sometimes you get some junk in there, a lot of the things are about technology, but they're not necessarily just press releases from the companies themselves. You have people writing on their personal blogs about, like, you know, why iOS isn't doing as well as Android, or, you know, like analyzing Walmart site performance, which is just an article written by this random guy. It's not, you know, by Walmart. And so it gives you kind of these different perspectives on things that are happening in science and technology and engineering. I've read articles about airplanes. I've read articles about CRISPR. I've read articles about optimizing databases. There's World of Warcraft on here, obviously, because it's all just a bunch of nerds. I mean, I'm saying that I'm on this app too. you know, there's just a little bit of everything. And so it's just nice to, I'm a lurker, so I don't comment. I don't have a login or anything like that, but it's nice to read through these articles and hear the, in generally, like, incredibly educated opinions that people have. There was one of my favorite articles that I read on here was about a Y Combinator backed service that was starting for people who had been in prison. And so it was giving opportunity. It was a job posting board for people who had been in prison, for employers that are friendly towards people who've had, you know, previous jail sentences. And this guy commented, it was the top comment. He was basically like, look, I was in prison for 20 years. This kind of thing is a godsend. I'm now a developer. I'm not going to say what company I'm at because for obvious reasons, it's kind of awkward. But he went into this whole depth thing about how, you know, this changed his life and how if he had had this, you know, 20 years ago, it would have been a completely different world for him. And I was like, dang, I would not have gotten that, like that kind of content if I was on another site. So the app is incredibly pretty. It gets out of your way while still showcasing a lot of standard material design in a way that I don't think a lot of other apps do. And the content from Hacker News is second to none, in my opinion. So that's materialistic.
Nice. I love
it. Not so materialistic. I guess the thing that's materialistic, it's about tech, which is material stuff.
Materialistic Hacker News. Right on. Love it. There it is. All right, Ron, I have your app installed. Let me pull it up and I'll show it.
All right.
What are you talking about?
Well, if you keep track of all my apps through the years, you know a lot of them have to do with productivity and a lot of them have with to-dos and GTD and getting things done is a big topic for me. So whenever I see a good task or to-do list app, I check it out. And the app today I'm talking about called 3.do or 3do is really, really interesting, and I really kind of dig it. The whole purpose of it is they have a whole little AI, a little chat bot that explains the whole
pushy
thing.
Pushy chat bot.
Say nah. Choose the third option. Nah, I'll skip it. Now, so there you go. Thank you. Yeah.
What a poor thing. Don't go anywhere.
it wants you to allow this one. Give the feedback to whatever. All right. Okay. So once you get through the chat bot, it's fine. But the whole premise of this, and don't hit anything yet, Jason. I want to hold on to it. The whole premise of this to-do app is the biggest problem with getting things done in to-do apps is that often the time it takes to capture the to-do is when you lose the momentum. You know you've got to do something. You're constantly trying to remind yourself, whatever. The time it takes to stop and write it down, add it to a to-do list, even tell Google Assistant, hey, add this to my to-do list, whatever, takes up time. And it's that little micro bit of time that gets in the way of being able to remember the stuff. So what 3do does is it breaks it down into three things: who, what, and when. And very quickly, using their tiles, you can say, okay, let's say you have to write an email, right? So in this particular case, you just tap me. And then it's either do, by, hang on, you went too fast there. Back it up. And on the what side of things, you got do, buy, pay, help, meet, call, write, discuss, arrange, all these different verbs. So we're going to say me, write, and do write, and then say, you know, tomorrow, right? And there it is. And then you can pick a time, and let's say 6 p.m. evening, right? So now you've quickly captured, I've got to write something by 6 o'clock tomorrow, right? So you can tap into it. If you hit the upper right-hand corner of the little menu right there, you can, if you tap on that, you can hit edit details and you can change the time that it's going to do. You could also add more information. You could say, write email to Ron. You could do whatever you might want to do. But the whole action of capturing, I need to do something, is enough to trigger that idea that I need to write something by tomorrow at 6 o'clock. If you don't want to go so super fast, you want to give a little more details, you could say, you know, hit friend, right? So friend, call, right? And you could say, tap where it says call instead of when, tap the text along top. You can actually edit that. So you can say, call Ron. You're going to remind me to call me. And then you could say, today or hit today. There you go. Pick a time. There it is. 7:15. So there you go. So now you know that you've got to call me at some point. So you can add some contextual information there. But the whole idea is that it's fast capture of to-do items. It will trigger a notification at 7:30 p.m. to tell you to call me. If you want to stop, let's say you did this before the notification has to happen. Let's say you already wrote the me write thing tomorrow. You could swipe it to the right and it will check it off and saying it's done. If you swipe to the left, right, you can reschedule.
Yeah, okay.
Real simple. Really, really simple.
I'm going to call you at 9 instead of 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
All right.
And that's really it. It's just who, what, and when for capturing tasks. The whole idea is to do it as quickly as possible so that you can remember the stuff that you need to do. For me, this is a lifesaver. I've been using it for the past couple of days, and just, you know, there's so many times throughout the day where I'm just like, oh, I've got to do that thing. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, cool. It's enough of a reminder to remind me what I need to do it. And then when I have time to sit down, I can go back and I can edit all those STHs, those little somethings, and actually add in the context as needed. Now, if you want to have a little more control over it, if you hit the upper right-hand corner, the three-dot menu, you can go to buy the app. They have some in-app purchases that allow you to support your devs and either get everything they offer for a lifetime for $75 or get 33% off. Hold off. Yeah, don't spend $75. If you hit the FAQ at the bottom, it explains what you get. So if you go to What is Pro, so you can customize the who, the what options. You can add your own tiles. So you can add the specific context to your life. You can set up repeating reminders, integrate Google Calendar. So it's really interesting, really neat, good app. So nice. 3.do or 3do, very simple task to-do list and task capture.
Right on. 3.do. 3do.
3do.
The quickest reminders task to-do app.
Literally milliseconds.
That's good. I'm sure the more you use it, the more you know where those things you're going directly to are. And it becomes easier over time. Awesome. So that is this week's arena. Twit.to/AAApoll 393 to place your vote for your favorite app. Is it 21-day meditation experience, tick, pick, materialistic, or 3.do? Place your vote, and we'll check in on it next week, except for Victor's, who's going to vote right now for 3.do.
Okay. All right.
Woo. All right. Wow.
Victor doesn't want to save on tickets, but he definitely wants to get his to-do list in order.
Yeah. He does. Yes. He needs to get things done more than he needs to go shows on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Some of us.
So just next time.
Or just.
Okay. And that is it. Boy, we went long, and I really apologize about that, Parth, especially for you, because I told you we were going
to
be done
I'm
a half an hour ago.
Here.
Well, we're happy to have you.
We're happy to have you.
Yeah, it's awesome to get you here today, and thank you for making the drive up and, yeah, hanging out with us for a little while.
It's my pleasure.
Right on. So tell people obviously august.com
yeah.
for the product, the products that you work on. Is that what you want to direct people to? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. August.com, we have a bunch of really cool content on there. You can see all of the products, all of the nifty things, all of the integrations, and maybe you could, buy a couple things for your family and friends. The holiday season is coming up. I'm just putting it out there. Yeah. Whatever you decide to do, it's your call. And if you do decide to buy our products, I'm not saying you should use the Android app because it's better. But I'm not saying to use the Android app either.
Yeah. So I think you probably should use the Android app.
I think you definitely use the Android app.
Yeah.
Especially if you're watching the show.
Yeah.
Parth, thank you again. We'd love to have you back. If you're ever interested, we'd love to have you back up here or Skype. I understand making the trek up to Petaluma is a little bit of a haul. But
for us city folk, yeah.
Yeah, but we've got a stocked kitchen. So, there's that.
Yeah.
Thank you again. Flo, what about you?
Oh, what about me? Yeah. excuse me. I could really use some help on WordPress, I just got to say, because I have no idea how to use it. But
well, they offer 24/7 support, Flo.
I know. I've been in the support forums trying to figure out how the heck to do things. So my website is looking a little bland right now, florenceion.com, but that's because I'm currently under construction. Currently working on some things, working on all this stuff. But what I'm also doing is actually adding content. So I'll be updating more often. You'll be able to see where I'm writing, when I'm streaming, where I'm podcasting, that sort of thing. And actually this week I had a little story go up on review.com about what I love the most about the Google Home Hub. So go check that out. And you can find a link to that at my website, florenceion.com.
Right on. Excellent. Thank you, Flo.
Thank you.
What about you, Ron?
Yeah, so the Finale podcast train keeps rolling. My latest podcast over at finalepodcast.com, all about enjoying the last episode of TV shows with someone who's never watched the show ever. This week we're tackling 24, where we revisited Kiefer Sullivan.
Chloe
as
enhanced.
Kiefer Sutherland. Yes, exactly. Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer in the last season 9, which really they probably shouldn't have done.
it had fallen apart by that point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So first two seasons were great though.
Yeah, I love that show. Don't get me wrong. I love when he yells. But you can subscribe to this. We're in Pocket Casts. We're in Google Podcasts. We're in Spotify. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we're there. Please subscribe, check it out, and follow me on Twitter, RonXO, and Instagram, RonXO.
Thank you, Ron. And get some sleep here in a few minutes. My apologies.
I plan to. No, I got like 2 hours more work. So
Oh, boy. All right. Victor, thank you. Appreciate all your help, man.
Oh, no problem, man.
Every single week.
Thank you, Victor.
You could take your stack of phones and take them to the Casino Royale.
Would that work?
I don't know if you've seen their markers when they're playing a hand.
No.
Right there.
Are they phones? Oh. Well, I guess so.
You just need a few of them.
I only need a few
you
more.
You just need a few of Mateo's colorful phones and stuff.
Wow. I only need a couple of more. I'm so close. So close to playing there almost. at the table with 007. Yeah, all these. I can shuffle them if you like.
We can probably play one hand.
Yeah, all in. You can find me here on the Twit Network doing shows. That's what I do each and every day. So you don't have to look very far. Twit.tv/best of. We are looking for your best of submissions. If there are things from our episodes that you like and you wanted a best of episode, now is the time to send them. I actually have to identify clips by the middle of this month. Yeah, we're doing it early this time around. So anyways, I would love your help. Twit.tv/best of. Let me know what you know, and then I will know it, and I'll be happy. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails to AAA@twit.tv. You can find the Arena apps list at twit.to/AndroidApps. Show notes of past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. And really, I think that's just about all you need to know. Let's end this show. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody. Have a good week.